Blog Talk Radio.
And here we are, this week. Pitcher Roger Clemens has been indicted for perjury. No, not for testifying that he never threw a spitball. A panel of federal judges has ruled that state-erected crosses along Utah's highways are an unconstitutional government endorsement of Christianity. Duh. Dr. Laura demonstrates that she understands the Constitution as well as she understands why it's wrong to use racial slurs. She then gets support from a great intellectual, Sarah Palin. New unemployment claims increased for the third week in a row. There were 12,000 more claims filed last week over a revised 488,000 the previous week, according to the Labor Department. In Florida, Governor Charlie Crist, reputed father of Jesus Crist, and an independent for the last 4 months, is ahead of his Tea Party opponent, who has the Republican nomination, Marco Rubio. Rubio was about to crucify Crist in the GOP primary when Crist decided to rise again as an independent. He's now ahead 39% to 32%. In case you haven't heard this, one in five Americans, according to a recent poll, believe that President Obama is a Muslim. This proves that approximately 20% of all of our citizens are idiots who can't or won't read and have no ability to reason or think. It also proves that most of the media believe that being a Muslim is a negative quality. Great news for travelers. That's right, American Airlines has figured out a new fee for you. If you want to sit in the first few rows of coach class, which is the class you normally ride in when you don't want to pay higher fees, the privilege will cost you $19 to $39, depending on how long the trip is. Like the old slogan says, American Airlines, doing what we do best, which in this case is gouging customers and losing money. In Illinois, former Governor Rod Blagojevich is convicted of one charge, gets a hung jury on 23 more, and acts and talks like he's been exonerated. Now, we can all wonder about why the jury couldn't decide he was trying to sell a Senate seat, but a lack of a decision isn't a not guilty verdict, Blago. Scientists report an increase in the risk of attention disorders, such as attention deficit disorder, in children whose mothers have been exposed to pesticides during pregnancy. Thankfully, I don't think my mother was among those exposed, I think. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. To show you how things have degenerated here in Arizona, Ben Quayle, who's running for Congress and last week got a lot of ink for saying President Obama is the worst in American history, could actually win both the GOP primary and the general election. Quayle could be the first Republican candidate who's dumber than his father. Now, I don't mean that no candidate is dumber than his or her own father. I mean, no Republican candidate has been dumber than Ben Quayle's father. Okay, maybe Tom Tancredo. All right, maybe George Bush. Okay, I'll give you Sarah Palin. Okay, let's forget about it. There are too many possibilities. And protests are expected to begin against the building of a religious building near a site where terrorism took place on U.S. soil. The church is within two blocks of the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, which was bombed by Timothy McVeigh, who was a Christian. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That would be me. All that, news of the weird, and our guest, Dr. Betsy King, who will talk to us about holistic veterinary medicine. But first, on Amazon.com, if you wish to go there and input in the search box the name Bushman, that would be me, or the book title, The Mobile Millionaire, you get to see an excerpt of my book, which oddly enough is called The Mobile Millionaire, which is a guide to small investors or tall investors who may wish to invest in mobile homes for income and wealth. If you're not interested, that's perfectly fine, but if you are, that would be the place to go. It's Amazon.com and input either Jeff Bushman or input The Mobile Millionaire, or just the words Mobile Millionaire. We'll go over some of those news headlines, and we've got news of the weird. We've also got some of this day in history. So let's talk about the news first, and in about 20 minutes, Dr. King will be joining us. Wanted to talk about Dr. Laura. Dr. Laura announced I think it was today, although it may have been last evening, that when her contract comes up at the end of the year, she is going to quit her radio show, saying that she is going to reclaim her First Amendment rights. Okay. For those of you who have been living in a cave and don't know the story, Dr. Laura had an African-American caller on her show who was concerned about her husband's family's racism. That is, the caller's husband's family's racism. I don't know if Dr. Laura's husband's family is racist. Anyway, so she was concerned about that and the use by her husband's family of the N-word. Well, Dr. Laura jumped on her and then in discussion used the N-word 11 times. And not saying the N-word, she said the whole word articulated, which I shan't repeat here. There can be all kinds of discussion about whether the word has been given too much power and all kinds of things, but the bottom line is that she demonstrated a gross insensitivity. That aside, too, the fact is that when she starts talking about her First Amendment rights, she obviously doesn't understand the First Amendment. The First Amendment says, in pertinent part, as they say, that the government shall make no law abridging the right of freedom of speech and other freedoms that are enumerated there. Dr. Laura has suffered from the utilization of First Amendment rights. First off, her own, that is, the right to free speech. She spoke rather more freely than she should have, perhaps, but she spoke freely. She had the right to do that. She was given the soapbox by the radio stations that air her program. And the people who were criticizing her were also exercising their free speech. The fact that they are criticizing her and that she's taking some level of... she might call it abuse, but I would call it justified criticism, is not a violation of her first speech, of her free speech rights or her First Amendment rights. A violation of her First Amendment rights is if the government came along and said, in this case perhaps the FCC, because you use that word, you're off the air for a year. One might think that that might be justified, but in fact that would be a violation of the First Amendment, and she is entitled to her First Amendment rights like the rest of us, no matter how she wishes to misuse them. But the reality is that this is not a First Amendment issue at all, in any way, shape, or form, and talking about it being so is a perfect example of extreme idiocy. Here's to you, Dr. Laura, and to your supporter, your great supporter, Sarah Palin. That new unemployment claims have increased is really not news, or is it terribly indicative of anything? We've talked about this in weeks past, but on the possibility that there's someone joining us who hasn't joined us before, I'll bore the rest of you. The fact is that unemployment is what's called a lagging indicator. It doesn't improve until the rest of the economy improves, and the rest of the economy, though improving, has a ways to go, admittedly. A more salient statistic is consumer spending, which is also going up and down, but unemployment will improve, and it'll get worse, and it'll improve, and it'll get worse. It will not improve on a steady level until the rest of the economy starts moving along. And additionally, when you talk about new unemployment claims, while that certainly is bad for all of the people who are unemployed, and it's bad in a lot of ways, at least thanks to the legislation that was sponsored by the president and finally passed by Congress, these folks are getting unemployment compensation. In the days leading to the Depression, there was no unemployment compensation. So one of the things that occurred was that people didn't have money to spend, and obviously there was great tragedy during the Depression, and there's been a fair amount of tragedy during this recession, but not nearly as badly as during the Depression. And one of the reasons for that is when people weren't getting unemployment compensation, were out of work, they had no money to spend. When they had no money to spend, besides all of the other terrible things that that involves, it means that there were no products being produced to satisfy the desires of those people who had no money because they couldn't buy them. And as a result of that, the folks who were making those products needed fewer people, so more people became unemployed. Anyway, that's an ongoing vicious circle. Unemployment, Social Security compensation, yes, I'm sorry, even welfare helps, never mind how it helps the people who get it, or perhaps doesn't help if you want to make that argument. The fact is it helps the rest of us because it is a buffer in the economy against a really serious problem. Roger Clemens, we mentioned, and we'll just mention briefly now, again, he was indicted for perjury for testifying that he never did steroids. And I'm not much of a baseball fan anymore, and haven't been for years, but one has to wonder, does anybody really care if athletes use drugs in a sport like professional baseball or professional football? You can argue that it would be terrible in college. But realistically, even if you like baseball, you can dislike the people who use steroids. And arguably, you can talk about their records being removed, but that seems like a tempest in a teapot, if you will. Again, bottom line is, who really cares? We talked about Rod Blagojevich. He's making the rounds. You will not be able to avoid seeing him over the next couple of weeks, couple of months, perhaps a year, until the prosecutor retries him, which they have said they are going to do. The jury could not make a decision on 23 of the 24 counts. He was convicted of lying to the FBI, which I will acknowledge is a really stupid idea for a crime. But there was no, and he made a good point, that they refused to allow a court reporter into the questioning, and there is no recording of that interview, though there are lots of recordings of his phone calls. You would think that somebody could have brought along a tape player, or a tape recorder, rather, even something as old-fashioned as that. And I'm sure the FBI has the technical expertise to record that kind of conversation, but they didn't. So my opinion is, first off, it's a stupid law. It shouldn't be against the law to lie to the FBI. You shouldn't lie to the FBI or police or any other authority. But when you say something and you don't agree with them as to what you said and they charge you with lying, that's, frankly, speaking of First Amendment issues, I think that's a real problem in terms of free speech. In many cases, not dealing with the FBI, it is not against the law to lie to law enforcement officers. In fact, a case recently came out that was an element of free speech, being able to lie, at least in campaigns. Can you imagine if it were against the law to lie during a political campaign? Nobody would run for office. But the fact is that there are 23 counts of with which he can still be charged, and the prosecutor has said that they're going to do that. So he's not been exonerated. He hasn't been ruled not guilty. What the next jury is going to do is hard to say, but again, he's been anything but exonerated. We made a semi-satiric remark at the end of our news readout about a church in Oklahoma City. There is no such protest, obviously, that's planned, but the mosque that's being planned for the area near Ground Zero in terms of 9/11 is over two blocks away. You can't see it from Ground Zero. It's difficult to understand why anyone thinks that a mosque two blocks away, when there are mosques in the general area and churches and synagogues, why that should bother anybody. The people who did the terrible act were Muslims, but again, Timothy McVeigh was a Christian. Someone's religion doesn't play into that, except perhaps that someone may have had an extreme belief that they thought was based on religion. The reality is that people act in spite of the good things that the holy books all say. May I just remind you briefly of the Crusades. We frequently survey the website newsoftheweird.blogspot.com, and we recommend that to you. The column on which that is based appears in a number of newspapers across the country, and since I know we have readers actually across the country, I said readers, I meant listeners, sorry, but some of you are readers, I expect. You can see News of the Weird in perhaps one of your local newspapers. It typically appears in a lot of the weekly, freely distributed newspapers. We used to call them throwaways, but that sounds too much like a term of derision, especially for someone who's written for a couple of them. In any event, newsoftheweird.blogspot.com is available to you on the web should you not have the column News of the Weird in your local newspaper. Here are a couple of stories from there. A judge in New Mexico held off the sentencing of a man convicted of securities fraud. Securities fraud, by the way, basically means that you sold stock and in some fashion defrauded the buyer of it. There are many more wrinkles on that and gradations and a lot more finesse, but that's the basics. A man was convicted of that charge in New Mexico, but the judge is allowing the convict to attempt to win some of the money back that he cheated, that he obtained by cheating other people. And the way he may get some of the money back is by participating in some local poker tournaments. Apparently the man has some skills at the game, and the judge thinks that if he can get some of the money back by gambling and give it back to the victims, the law, the justice will be served. I just hope he doesn't cheat at cards. In Ohio, there was a turning of the tables and probably several sets of eyes. A church group there has been protesting at a nearby strip club and using bullhorns to persuade customers to turn away and avoid committing the sin, or sins generally. The strippers now have responded in kind. They're now showing up at church services in their most enticing outfits. Let us pray. And in another story of religious faith, the Catholic Diocese of Madison, Wisconsin, said it will comply with the new state law requiring employee health plans with prescription drug benefits to cover birth control, too. That's a requirement of the law. If you have health benefits, you've got to cover birth control. And, of course, the Catholic Church is antagonistic to birth control, except one type. In any event, the church has said they'll follow the law, they'll have that benefit, but that if an employee chooses to, quote, misuse, close quote, the law, by actually using birth control, that will be grounds for termination. Okay. Apparently, they really prefer that single people who are having sex get pregnant, women anyway, get pregnant, rather than using birth control. So I guess what they want people to do is, you know, just show up pregnant. Apparently, if you're single, and you, a single woman, and you show up pregnant as an employee of the Catholic Church, that's a reason to be celebrated. But if you're taking a pill, that's grounds for termination. Okay. Day in history. Today is August 20th. I mention that because although those of you who are listening live and haven't been away from a calendar all day, exactly as I said, today is August the 19th. That's what I meant. Thank you. Today, everybody knows. Yeah, apparently, except for me, I was about to say, those of you who are listening live, if you haven't been away from a calendar all day, know that today is August 19th, and I actually was around a calendar all day today, and still got it wrong. So today is August 19th, and on this day in history, changing the subject quickly for my own ineptitude, racing began on this date in history at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in, anyone want to guess the year? 1909. Our producer, Autumn Bushman, was about to guess, but I kind of cut her off. I'm sorry. 1909 is when the Indianapolis racetrack began racing there. 1909, by the way, is also a significant year for coin collectors. And if we don't get a call before I tell you why, I will tell you why. By the way, if you wish to join us, either now or after Dr. King joins us, the phone number is 347-994-3796. I'm slapping my hand and saying bad host for not giving that out to you before. I apologize. 64 years ago on this date, August 19th, 64 years ago, someone famous in the United States was born. His name is Bill Clinton, the 42nd President of the United States. Happy birthday, sir. And also on this date, in 1934, in a move that caused a furor in the rest of the world, Germany voted to give Hitler that post. Okay, it's a play on words, all right, but that really happened. And in 1977, on this date, August 19th, Groucho Marx died at age 86. When that happened, incidentally, an old movie was on TV, and I was watching Groucho and Harpo in my pajamas. How they got in my pajamas, I'll never know. But that's an old Groucho Marx joke, and he was also known at that time as old Groucho Marx. The phone number again here is 347-994-3796. A program note, which is probably an F-sharp, next week is our 52nd week doing the show with one or two absences in the meantime, but it will have been 52 weeks since we began. That is, next week is our first year anniversary. So, Please send no cards. But joining us is our most frequent guest, Larry Hancock. And he'll be talking about the newest edition of his book. They're coming out with a revised edition. And in the coming weeks, I have, they don't know it yet, but I have decided to try to reach some of our former guests to reappear on the show. We're also going to bring you some new folks. I almost said, and the old folks, but that makes them sound ancient. But we'll be trying to reach some of... So if you are listening and you're a former guest, you may well be hearing from us. But that's what the plan is. I invite you to tune in. Those of you who are listening live, as opposed to... Well, never mind. Those of you who are listening live are invited to go to the same website you came to listen to the show and listen to some of our past shows. And for those of you who, the converse is also true. For those of you who are listening to an archived edition of this show, let me invite you to join us live, that is for live listening. On Thursday evenings, we are here from 7:30 to 8:30 Pacific time, and that would, of course, be 10:30 to 11:30 on the East Coast. And if the pattern follows, I know of some people in New Jersey who are listening now. Hi, guys. And they join us each Thursday night. As a matter of fact, we now know that we have visitors, listeners on both coasts and several places in between, so I want to thank you all for joining us. And I am curious as to whether anyone is listening from a foreign country. I don't mean if you formerly lived in a foreign country, but whether anyone is listening either in archived form or live. If you're in a country other than the United States, I would love to hear from you, either by phone, which, again, you can do at 347-994-3796, or you could drop me a note, and I will mention you in an upcoming show to jb720@cox.net. And it would be fascinating to hear about that. I'm interested in out-of-the-country listeners. I hesitate to use the word foreign. I guess international listeners is the preferred phrase. I used to be very into shortwave radio listening and still occasionally enjoy listening to foreign broadcasts, international broadcasts. And if someone is listening in another country, obviously I'd be interested. And let me mention something I've mentioned before, but it's been a while, to you if you're interested in radio generally. And that is a website which is Reciva.com, and I have another one for you in a moment, Reciva.com. On that website, you can, assuming you have speakers on your computer, otherwise you can, of course, get to the station, but listening will be rather difficult. If you do have speakers, you can go to any of the, not only the sites that Reciva makes available, but you can actually pick radio stations by genre or by location. You can get it down to the city level, or you can go by countries. But for the most part, in my case, I listen by genre. And as you can tell, if you speak the language, I don't speak French. And whether you want to listen to jazz or talk or country or New Age music, that's right, or rock, or pretty much anything else, classical music, opera, God forbid, I just showed my view, but anything you want to hear, you from around the world, you can hear at Reciva.com, and I've heard, as I've mentioned before, jazz from Russia and a number of other countries and talk shows in Australia and Great Britain. If any of that interests you at all, Reciva.com is the place to go. Also, let me recommend to you another site if you are interested in radio, which is radiotime.com. Radiotime is similar, and one of the things they have that I like that you may also enjoy is they have a category of NPR stations, and you can listen to different NPR programs at different times a day right at your computer or while it's in the background, while you're working, playing, working on the computer, whatever it is you want to do. So that's radiotime.com, and you can listen to it. Now it gives me pleasure, if I can go ahead and hit the right button, to bring in Dr. Bessie King. Dr. King, are you there?
Yes, I am. You hit the right button.
Oh, I did get the right button. Thank you, yes. Dr. King is a, I'll let her correct me if I'm wrong, but she is a holistic veterinarian who graduated as a doctor of veterinary medicine from the University of California at Davis, which is the one of the hardest and one of the best-known veterinary medicine schools in the world. And she then had postgraduate instruction in acupuncture and became certified in veterinary acupuncture and is knowledgeable on Chinese herbology. And she has also been certified by the International Veterinary Chiropractic Association. And she's in practice here in Arizona. You're actually in Mesa, right?
Correct.
Is that Mesa or Chandler?
No, the practice is in Mesa.
Yeah, I've been there. As a matter of fact, I, in the interest of full disclosure, our dog is a patient at Dr. King's practice. And I just, the way that most suburbs are in America, the borders are fluid, and sometimes if you're not sure, it's not altogether clear where you are. But she's in Mesa, Arizona, and if you are in the area of the Valley of the Sun and have an animal, I would recommend her practice to you. Anyway, welcome, Dr. King. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing just superbly.
Good.
And first, I suppose I should ask you, for those who don't know, which would probably be most people, what is holistic veterinary medicine?
Well, the title is actually kind of a misnomer. I mean, in all medicine, we seek for total health.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just kind of a different moniker for those of us that embrace somewhat unconventional or traditional forms of veterinary medicine, just like human medicine.
Right. But understanding that it's a misnomer, you're saying just basically embracing the more natural approaches rather than just all drugs? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, it's a way of adding tools to your toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
Holistic medicine, the people often will use acupuncture. We will
mm-hmm.
use herbs. We will use manipulation. We will use nutritional supplements. We will often change diet.
Right.
We'll focus on things like exercise and environmental issues.
Mm-hmm.
So it's trying to include everything that impacts the animal's well-being.
And I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
Well, it's fun, it's exciting, it's a way of adding hope to some cases where the conventional methods aren't working or the conventional methods are not satisfactory or appealing to the owners.
Mm-hmm.
For example, today I just... Oh, go ahead.
No, I said please. Go ahead with your example.
Okay. Oh, for example, I had a really sweet little beast presented to me today. She's a very much a senior citizen doggie.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a very ugly invasive tumor that came up very suddenly. Surgery would be very debilitating for her.
I assume it's a malignant tumor.
Oh, it's nasty. It's
okay.
Ugly.
Yeah.
And at this point, if you were going to a traditional vet, it would either be surgery or approach the dog with hospice care.
Mm-hmm.
With non-traditional methods, with my acupuncture and herbology, my goal is to support and maximize this dog's balance and give her the maximum quality of life that she can have for whatever time we have left.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious because you mentioned, you know, to some people, hearing hospice care in reference to an animal may seem silly, and it doesn't to those of us who have dogs and cats who are treating our animals like they're our children. And in fact, better than children in some cases. And
yeah.
I've never heard of hospice care for pets. Is that something new?
Yes, it is. There was the first hospice and end-of-life conference at UC Davis. I believe it was last year or the year before.
Mm-hmm.
And they addressed issues that owners will face as their animals live longer and longer.
Right.
And technology gets more and more advanced. When is goodbye?
Yeah.
And, you know, we have so many more and better painkillers. We have so many more supportive care instruments. We've got, you know, the slings for dogs and the carts for dogs. But when the end is inevitable,
mm-hmm.
like a malignant tumor that is non-resectable, you can't cut it out, it's going to take the dog's life, or it's kidney failure or heart failure, how do you support that animal and the owners and their animals in the household?
Yeah. So what did you do for the dog with the malignant tumor?
Well, in Chinese terms, this was what we call a wood element dog.
Okay.
She was very set in her mind about what I could do and what I couldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
She was a very dominant dog. She had her space. And I was allowed to do what I call aquapuncture.
Aquapuncture, this is something involving water.
Well, actually, you take a liquid substance, a sterile liquid substance, right. often vitamin B12 or
okay.
some of the homeopathic injectable medicines, and you inject these into the acupuncture points to
okay.
stimulate them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way of getting acupuncture done without having to let the animal tolerate the needles for 10 to 20 minutes, as they usually have
right.
to.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. And I would like to support her with herbs. We're going to try herbs for this little girl.
Great.
And I'm checking with the owners the day after tomorrow to see how she feels. You know, part of her
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, with the satellite delay, I keep getting confused.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, my goal is to get her more relaxed. She's restless at night. She's
mm-hmm.
pacing. Her appetite is variable. My goal is to focus on calming her mind,
uh-huh.
lifting her spirits, improving her appetite, and allowing her to come out of the funk that she's in and be more balanced.
And that may or may not extend her life? Or are you fairly confident that it would?
I don't know that my treatments extend these dogs' lives, but I do know that the owners report they feel better
mm-hmm.
and they do better overall. It's like being a runner. You want to run, and then when you hit that end, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually what happens. They are good, and then boom, they're done.
Yeah. But at least what you're saying, if I perceive it correctly, is that you're broadly improving the quality of life for them during the period that they have.
Right. And, you know, it's like any treatment, it's like medicine. The reason there's so many darn ways of handling things is because not one of them is absolutely perfect for every
mm-hmm.
patient.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and also you're talking, in human terms, there was an author, Dr. Bernie Siegel, who talked
yes.
about healing as being different from curing. And that's essentially what you're saying as well.
Right, and I think that veterinarians we've grasped that content for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Veterinarians, as a rule, are kind of independent people. we all have our own opinions, and we're not afraid to. But our goal has always been quality of life, not quantity.
Right.
And accepting the limitations.
Yeah, well, very often there are no choices there, I mean, in terms of the limitations.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. But, oh, you know, and what I do is traditional Chinese medicine and herbology and manipulative therapy with chiropractic. I have colleagues here in the Valley that are extremely skilled with homeopathy.
Right.
There are many people that do energy work.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us are focusing more and more on nutrition. I'm dragging out my nutrition books that put me to sleep in vet school and going, oh, my God. This is so important, you know.
Yeah.
And I am paying more attention to my own nutrition and my own weight, my own condition.
Well, yeah, that brings me to a point I was going to raise, and I'll come back to it in a second, but that has to do with vegetarianism. And as you and I spoke before, my wife and I are both vegetarians, but our dog is not. And I want to talk to you about whether vegetarianism is a good idea for animals, and I suspect it's not, but I'll have you answer. But the other thing I want to talk to you about first is acupuncture in the following sense. There are a great many people who believe that in terms of humans that acupuncture works when it works because the human is buying into the belief system that it's psychologically based. And I'm assuming, since animals don't have the same psychological makeup as humans, that your experience suggests that acupuncture works because it works, not because someone or it believes it will.
Well, yes, the animals do give us an unbiased reflection. There are some really good studies being done at the universities now on objective evaluation of acupuncture and placebo effect of acupuncture.
Right.
It has been validated, especially in the orthopedic circles, the neuromuscular circles, that acupuncture can relieve pain,
mm-hmm.
and animals will move better when they don't hurt.
Right.
The other thing is that the Chinese form of medicine is over 3,000 years old.
Right.
It's a very different model of how things work.
Mm-hmm.
But if you accept the premise of their model, it's as intricate and detailed and as difficult to learn and manage as anything Western medicine can throw at you.
Yeah, yeah. Let me mention at this point, although most of the time people don't call in, they just listen. If anyone does wish to call in, the number is 347-994-3796. And although obviously Dr. King is not in a situation where she can diagnose your dog or cat, if you have a general question, obviously we'd welcome it. The other question is in terms of pets' diets. Would it be fair to say that animals are becoming more obese as more humans are becoming more obese over time?
Oh, especially in first world nations, yes.
Yeah, like the United States, in other words.
Yeah, and the whole nutritional conclave of veterinarians, we're going back to the drawing board and looking again at what is real.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs, to answer your question about vegetarianism, dogs
mm-hmm.
can be vegetarians, but you just have to be very careful. The diets out there that are commercially prepared
mm-hmm.
do have to undergo testing and verification that they meet certain standards. It's the AFCCO standards.
Mm-hmm.
But not all companies ascribe to those standards.
Right.
And there are differences among different creatures for certain trace minerals and certain vitamins and certain amounts of roughage that may not be met by a commercially prepared diet.
Right.
For vegetarian dogs, there are vegetarian diets prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And I would stick with that rather than trying to make my own up.
That would be a great deal of work, I got to tell you.
It is, but you know, for some of my patients who've got bizarre allergies or absolutely strange sensitivities to foods and inhalant allergies, pollen, dust, that kind of thing, home cooking has been a godsend to at least get their immune system balanced.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a completely balanced diet. You can.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's true. Sure. Well, I mean, obviously, humans, to a degree, have a similar problem in that not all vegetarians are adequately nourished. You have to know what you're doing to some degree. I mean, it's not really that critical for humans, but for small animals particularly, it becomes more critical, right?
Right, because they've got a very high metabolic rate. They don't consume that much per sitting, and they can't tell you that they've got this hankering for broccoli for some strange reason.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, you know, our dog is an example. When certain vegetables are being cooked and certain grains are being cooked, you can tell she'd really like some. We don't feed her from the table, but I mean, you could tell she'd really like some of that stuff. And, you know, and a lot of animals, of course, are fed from the table, and that's where I was alluding to the obesity issue. I assume, and perhaps you have a better perspective, but I assume one of the reasons that animals, pet animals, are becoming more obese is because their owners are feeding the animals like they're feeding themselves.
Well, yes and no. Part of the problem is they trust that what's on the back of the bag for suggested feeding amounts is absolutely true.
Uh-huh.
I've never met a dog that actually needs as much food as the bags recommend.
Okay.
I don't know. So, first of all, they have to be more aware that just because the bag says Fifi needs 2 cups of dry food morning and evening, it doesn't necessarily mean Fifi needs that.
They're trying to sell more dog food.
Well, yeah, and maybe in their particular kennel studies, they had the Iditarod sled dogs being tested.
Yeah, who were really working off the calories, is what you're suggesting.
Right.
Yeah.
And people will... I don't mind people feeding from the table if it is good quality vegetable matter or small amounts of protein, but you have to add it into the overall equation of how much food is Fifi getting.
Right.
The real killer things are those biscuits and the pepperonis and all those things that dogs go crazy for.
Yeah.
Well, that they taste great because they're high in fat and sugar.
Yeah, right. Again, the same kind of problems that plague humans modernly.
Ah.
Yeah. Terrible. Go ahead, I'm sorry. You never met what?
Oh, I just never met a carbohydrate I didn't like.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was going to say, if you're talking about complex carbohydrates, you know, you and I may, you're obviously more educated than I am, but, in this area, but I will tell you that you're talking to someone who's on a high complex carbohydrate diet. So, I mean, not as a means of losing weight, I mean, just the way of eating. And those carbohydrates, don't seem to do any harm. It's the simple, it's the simple refined stuff, you know, the Hershey bars, the Mr. Good bars, all the rest of that stuff that is killing people in the country, in my opinion.
Yep.
Yeah. Talk to us for a moment, if you will, about... Oh, and by the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. You mentioned that you could have a vegetarian dog if you're, careful. Is the same thing true of cats, or do they have to be carnivores?
Well, cats are one of the only species of obligate carnivores. They have to have...
What is an obligate carnivore?
Oh, okay. An obligate carnivore... Obligate means you don't have a choice about it.
Okay, go ahead.
There are no options.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's because of their ancestry, I assume, in terms of genetics.
Right. They actually have a different makeup in their liver enzymes.
Hmm.
And their protein need and their protein metabolism is different for... We're not sure exactly all the reasons, but we do know that if they do not give a certain amount of taurine, they develop heart disease.
Did you say taurine?
Taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N.
Oh, taurine. Okay.
Yes.
That's an amino acid. Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's found in meat.
Right.
So, yeah, don't try to make a cat a vegetarian.
Okay. And what I wanted to ask you about next was something that I'm completely unfamiliar with, and I assume a good portion of our audience is as well, and that is chiropractic care for animals. I can practically hear the crunches of the vertebra.
So, are you familiar with chiropractic medicine in general?
For humans, sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just going to share with you that having been a runner, when I was a little more active running than I am now, I would be visiting the chiropractor every 2 weeks.
Right. Well, yeah. Chiropractic is founded on the belief that the body's a self-healing mechanism,
mm-hmm.
and that small alterations in the function of the joints, the skeletal system, will impact
right.
the nervous system, which rules everything.
Right.
So we adopt that for animals, and yes, you can do adjustments on horses.
Okay.
I know there's a lady vet that adjusts cows. The whole trick is force equals mass times acceleration. There's no way you're going to be big enough to get a cow vertebra realigned, but you can be fast enough to do that. So, yes, we do realign spines, extremities, hips. I do see some agility dogs. I see a lot of geriatric dogs. I love to get my hands on puppies because the birth trauma can mess
sure.
up their skull and their spine. It's just a wonderful way of allowing the body to reboot itself into its normal balance again.
Yeah, I've got to ask you about this thing about speed with chiropractic for cows, because the thing I'm picturing is someone taking a flying leap onto the back of a cow and then pressing their hands against their spine. I have a feeling that's not what you meant.
No, it's not. Most of the adjustments are done with hands. Sometimes the veterinary chiropractors will use an activator, which is what they call the clicker device.
Yeah.
But the way a cow is, the way you adjust a cow is you basically climb up on the railing of the chute that the cow is in.
Okay.
And you position yourself. Yeah, they're not running all over the place. They do have to be contained.
Good.
Oh,
yeah. It could be the creation of a new athletic event for ESPN. I don't know. Go ahead with what you were saying, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
So the whole trick is to get yourself in the right position. If you learn how to use your body ergonomically and appropriately,
mm-hmm.
and you get that precise force of direction and correction,
mm-hmm.
and you give that controlled low amplitude thrust,
right?
You're gonna reset things.
I got you. You understand why I was asking the question, because you were talking, besides it sounded funny to me, but when you were talking about the speed and in terms of how to get that, basically what you're saying is that's really just a matter of positioning and doing the adjustment fairly quickly.
Yeah, you get really good arms, shoulders. It's a great workout, man.
I'll bet.
You get buff.
although I would imagine someone who specializes in that has great trouble in social situations when someone says, "So tell me, what do you do for a living?"
They'll make up a cover story.
They'll say they do anything else except cow chiropractic. But you do, obviously, from what you're saying, you do chiropractic on small animals as part of your veterinary practice, and they seem to thrive with that kind of manipulation. I can tell you as a human, it feels great.
Well, you know, it's interesting. They have to allow me. I cannot muscle my way into an animal's confidence.
Yeah.
I have to work with them, gain their trust, get them to stand still.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some that always give me a growl when I get to a certain spot.
Yeah.
Because that's their owie spot.
Right.
But when they trot off sound and they're traveling with a straight spine and an excellent gait, and you hear the forepaws hitting the way they're supposed to,
mm-hmm.
it's just a thrill. It is so rewarding.
I'm sure. Sure, that's true. How does the practice of traditional Chinese medicine enter into veterinary practice? Oh, let me back up a step, too. When you're talking about veterinary practice generally, you're, even though you are more of a natural healer, you still, in terms of the toolbox, as you put it, there are times when you do prescribe drugs for animals, right?
Oh,
I should say pharmaceutical drugs.
Yeah, in fact, I do what I try to call an integrated approach.
Right.
There are patients that will come in, and they are so miserable with allergies that I will prescribe a humane dose and course of prednisone.
Right.
Because it takes longer for acupuncture, herbology, and nutrition to get this animal feeling good.
Right, and sometimes you need a quick fix.
Yeah, and emergency medicine, trauma. Western mm-hmm. medicine is really much better at that.
Right.
But I still need blood work. I mean, I run lab work on my animals,
mm-hmm.
check liver and kidneys. There are some really toxic herbs out there. Monitor my patients regularly if they're on herbs for any extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got all that good aspect of my toolbox, and then I've got this other stuff.
Right. We actually are running short of time. We don't have to stop yet, but I wanted to ask you to mention, because not everybody's in Arizona who's listening to the show, if someone wanted to find a holistic veterinarian, there's a website for the association, correct?
Right. The American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association.
Okay. Put that in your Google and smoke it. The American Holistic Veterinary Medicine Association?
Veterinary Medical Association.
Medical Association. Okay. So, yeah, and there are members in most of the states across this country. And if you're not in this country, of course, you'll have to look up something else. But that will get you where you need to go in terms of finding someone in your local area. And, of course, if you're in the broader Phoenix area, and particularly in the East Valley of the Sun, you can visit with Dr. King's office. And the name of, besides looking you up, the name of the practice is?
Oh, it's Power Road Animal Hospital.
There you go. In the meantime, while we still have some time, let me ask you what I was going to ask you before. How traditional Chinese medicine plays into the practice of treating animals. How does, I mean, someone comes to see you for, make something up, but for some kind of ailment. And how does TCM impact on that?
Well, for myself, what I do is I do a conventional exam where I, listen to heart, lungs, and stuff. Let's say they came in for, a good one, vomiting for 4 days.
That doesn't sound very good to me, but go ahead.
Yeah. So I do my conventional exam, and I find that only thing that I can really pinpoint is that the cat's really uncomfortable when I get near the spleen area. Mm-hmm. So we take an X-ray, and we don't see a foreign body, and we don't see a mass. We don't see evidence of any aggressive pathological thing going on. Well, then you do my Chinese exam,
mm-hmm.
which has diagnostic points. If an animal or a patient is sensitive when you press on certain points, it gives you a clue as to which meridian or which element is undergoing qi blockage or pain.
So these are the same points that you would use in acupuncture, essentially.
Correct. Yes.
Okay, go ahead, please.
So, there was an animal that came in for vomiting, and it was seen by another doctor in our practice. And I just kind of did my Chinese exam on her and ran my fingertips down her spine and stuff. And I said, wow, she is really sensitive near the over the small intestine and large intestine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, she had something in there.
Mm.
And when we took the radiographs, it was very obvious. But the Chinese medicine gave me a stronger indication that, yeah, we really need to get abdominal films on this spot.
I lost the last part of what you said. You really need to get abdominal what?
Oh, abdominal x-rays on this dog.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And that was because of the background in traditional Chinese medicine. You were able to perceive that and then, in fact, confirm it on diagnosis and confirm it in terms of the x-ray.
Yeah, they complement each other. They really do. And I get a lot of patients that they want to incorporate aspects of traditional Chinese medicine along with the Western medicine.
Sure.
Which is great.
Yeah, as you said, it's an integrative approach, and you're getting the best of both worlds, to coin a cliche.
Well, that's my hope.
Well, and you've been doing this for, I'm not trying to make you sound old, but you've been doing this for a fair amount of time, and obviously you've been successful at treating animals for a number of years, so obviously something's working. Have you always had this approach in your practice?
Oh, no. I got interested in this field of veterinary medicine after I'd been out for about 15 years.
Ah.
And I just knew there was more out there. There were other forms of healing that were successful, that were valid, and I wanted to be part of that.
Right. And I assume they have meetings of other veterinarians that you go to from time to time into who are of the same orientation, poor choice of words perhaps, same orientation, you guys share what you've learned.
Yeah, we've got our own journals and our own chat rooms, and yeah, in fact, you have to continue your education if you're going to remain certified.
Sure. Do you find that there are a lot of pet animals, and I'm referring to that because obviously that's mostly, I assume, what you see, but do you find there are a lot of pet animals who are nutritionally deficient in one or more basic nutrients, despite the fact, or perhaps because of the fact, they're eating the commercial food preparation?
Well, I find that they're lacking in a balance of their nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
I just personally feel that having nothing but dry kibble every day, it doesn't provide the satisfaction that a normal dog would get if it were allowed to choose what it could eat on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we don't really have perfect ways of measuring nutritional levels. There are some lab tests out there that can measure trace minerals, but they're pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that nutrition should incorporate a philosophy of variety.
I understand. Let me cut you off with apologies. We have about a minute left. And this would be the appropriate time for me to say thank you very much. I've really enjoyed this, and I know that anyone who has been listening to us has also enjoyed it. You're very engaging and obviously very knowledgeable, and I appreciate you joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
Oh, great. Thank you. And for those of you, again, who are in the area, it's Power Road Animal Hospital, and I can tell you they give terrific care. Thanks, Dr. King. Talk to you at another time.
Thank you. Okay,
my pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I am still with you, but not for very long, and we have less than a minute left now. So let me invite you to join us next week for our anniversary show, and tell your friends, anyone who not only would like to hear something unusual, which is what the show is every week. And Dr. King was very, when I say unusual, I'm referring to myself, by the way. Dr. King was very knowledgeable and informative, and I know you enjoyed that. And as I say, next week we'll have Larry Hancock scheduled to join us, and I invite you to do the same. And you're welcome to call in, talk to him, talk to me, share your opinions and your questions. As said, next week is the anniversary show, the first anniversary of the show. With that in mind, let everybody else know about the show that you wish to. And talk to you next week. We hope you have a great week between now and then. So join us next week, same bat time, same bat channel. Have a great night. Bye-bye.